So good morning. As you heard, my name is Ariana. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And this is my third summer getting to be here at Mount Hermon. And got my master's in marriage and family therapy from Western Seminary. Was on staff at a local church here in Santa Cruz for about 5 years. And I actually got to teach this material to my church last summer and really enjoyed it. So I'm very excited to get to talk about this with you guys. So I like to just kind of set some, give some permission to you all that you have permission to ask questions, to share concerns or doubts or opinions and personal experiences, because I feel like learning is so much more rich when if you're like, I'm not so sure about that, that you raise your hand and say that so we can talk about it, rather than being like, yeah, this lady doesn't know what she's talking about. I'm just going to check out for the rest of this hour. So if I say something that you're like, huh, that seems kind of strange, I would love for you to bring it up, because then that tells me, oh, I need to explain that better or something like that. So you all have that permission, okay? You are free to ask questions. So yeah, even as I'm teaching, please feel free. So I want to ask today, first today, we're going to talk about what do we mean when we say boundaries, because people throw that word around a lot. So we're going to talk about what that is, and then what are common boundary issues. So what are ways that it looks like when people are having a hard time with healthy boundaries? And then tomorrow, we'll talk more practically about, like, okay, so then how do we do this? How do we set those boundaries? But first, we got to know what we're dealing with, right, before we can change it. So I want to ask, and you guys can just yell it out loud, what comes to mind when I say boundaries? What words come into your head or phrases? And you can be honest, they may not be positive things.
Just say no.
Okay. Anything else that comes into your mind?
Mine is curiosity, because I don't really know
what we mean when we say that. Perfect. Well, good thing you're here. Okay. Anything else that comes into mind when I say boundaries? Anything, even just noticing, like, in your body, like, does it tense up when you hear that word? Does it relax when you hear that word? And I ask that because different people have different preconceptions about what we mean when we say that. And sometimes, especially in Christian circles, sometimes boundaries are seen as this negative thing. Like I did say, sometimes I've had clients where I've, you know, said, well, have you thought about, like, not doing that every time this person asks? And they're like, well, I want to love them the way God would love them. And that leads me to believe that they don't think that boundaries are loving or godly, which I would very much disagree with that, and we're going to talk about that. So what a boundary is, if you just think at the most basic level, it distinguishes one thing from another. So think about if you have a house and a yard, and maybe you have a fence. That fence is a boundary, right? It distinguishes your property from your neighbor's property. So that's one way to think about it. You know where your property ends and your neighbor's begins. A less concrete way to think about boundaries is what is and is not okay with you. So you might have an idea in your mind, in your family you might have this, with your children you might have this, on what is okay and what is not okay. And we also see this throughout Scripture. I mean, God gives his commandments to Israel, right? He tells Israel what he's okay with and what he's not okay with. So that's boundaries. Boundaries is also respect for ourselves and for others. It's saying, I respect myself enough to not just let whatever happen to me, but I also respect you enough to tell you when I'm not okay with something. It's also taking responsibility for our own lives and letting other people take responsibility for their own lives. And we'll talk about that more as we talk about the different boundary issues. But a lot of times, we end up taking responsibility or feeling responsible for other people. And there is a difference between being responsible to someone and being responsible for them. We are all responsible to people. Maybe, you know, if you're married, you're responsible to your spouse. You're responsible to be faithful to them, to care for them, to be emotionally available to them. But you're not responsible for what they do. If they do something that's less than ideal, you're not responsible for what they do or for their feelings. And so that's a really important distinction. And it's kind of tricky, and sometimes it kind of bleeds into each other. So boundaries are about taking responsibility for the things that you're supposed to take responsibility for. And boundaries are also supposed to keep the good in and the bad out. So boundaries cannot just be this thick metal wall, because, you know, nothing can penetrate a thick metal wall, right? And so boundaries actually need to be breathable. They can't be so rigid that nothing can go through them, but they need to have enough substance to where you keep the bad out. And again, I'll be painting this all a little more. To look at it biblically, it's letting your yes be yes and your no be no. And just think about, I'm sure we could all think about a time where we said yes to something. So outwardly we were saying yes, but deep inside we're like, this is the last thing I want to do. So most of us have done that at some point in our lives, where we've said yes to something that we really didn't feel up for. And then sometimes maybe we drag our feet. So we're not, you know, directly saying, I don't really want to do this, because we feel like maybe we're not allowed to. We don't want to be mean. But then our actions say no. And so, and scripture tells us, let our yes be yes and our no be no. So that's also boundaries. So it's also saying no to good or bad things. Sometimes we say no to good things, right? So that we can focus on the most important good things. And I am really good at overloading my schedule with good things. And I've told like my friends, my boyfriend, like, okay, like I have all this free time now. So if you see me starting to like pile things on, I just need you to like grab me and shake me a little bit and be like, stop it, don't do that. Because it's really easy. Because I'm like, well, this is such a great thing that I love, and this is such a great thing that I love. But when I have too many great things that I love, I don't really enjoy any of it, because I don't have space to be present. I'm running from one thing to the next. And so sometimes having boundaries means saying no to good things, because there's only so many hours in the day and I only have so much emotional energy to give. So, but the important thing is that it's saying no so that you can focus on what is most important. So a nice metaphor for boundaries is it's like a fence with a gate that opens and closes. So yeah, it keeps things out, but it has an opening. So when you want something to come in, it can open. When you want something to go out, it can open. So boundaries need to be flexible. So it's not that I will never do this ever, and that I will never change my mind on that. You know, it's allowed, they are allowed to move and shift. So what boundaries are not, and this is what a lot of times people get the sense, and sometimes they don't even know where they learned this. It's just maybe a message that's been communicated in different ways. It's not division. So, you know, a fence, it doesn't necessarily have to be divisive, right? You can still talk to your neighbor over the fence, right? It's not selfishness. A lot of times when people say no to someone, they feel very selfish. And we'll talk more about how that's not the case. It's not an ultimatum. It's not a way to manipulate or punish others. And like I said before, it's not a brick wall that's impenetrable. So this is where it can feel a little counterintuitive, where I'm saying it's separating one thing from another, but at the same time I'm saying it's not division. It's separation for the sake of greater closeness. And I'll give you guys a little illustration. In my life with my family, I had a time where I needed to set some boundaries with my father. And he lives in San Diego. And just a lot had been going on in our family and had been really hectic. And I just didn't feel very comfortable staying with him when I visited anymore. And I could have just sucked it up and stayed with him to make him happy. But on the inside, I would have started to develop resentment towards him. And I think it would have actually created a bigger rift in our relationship. So for the sake of our relationship, I said, you know, I'm going to stay with my sister or my friend when I come visit. I will still come see you. I want to spend time with you, but I just don't feel comfortable staying with you anymore. And, you know, he was upset, and that was fine. And because people get upset sometimes when we set boundaries. And one thing that I really, one of my mantras during that time was, just because someone is mad at me doesn't necessarily mean I've done something wrong. And I think a lot of times we automatically think, oh, that person's mad at me, what did I do? And we make it, again, that's taking responsibility for their feelings, right? And it doesn't mean that, like, we do whatever we want and we're inconsiderate and we're like, well, it's your problem that you're upset with me. No, that's not what we're doing here. If we can step back and think, like, well, is there anything wrong with me deciding not to stay with my father? No, like, that's okay. I'm an adult. I'm allowed to make that decision. And it's not to spite him. It's not to hurt him. It's to preserve our relationship. So that seemed like division, right? I have this physical separation with my father. But over the years, I was able to, you know, I'd visit him, and I didn't have all this extra stress that came with staying with him, because my father had a pretty volatile temper. So I could be with him and be relaxed and knowing, like, okay, if he has his temper, I can just get up and leave. Again, that's another boundary. If you start yelling, I'm going to leave. I love you, and it's not to punish you, but again, what am I okay with? What am I not? I'm okay with being with you when you're upset. I'm not okay with being yelled at. So those are all examples of how I've used boundaries in my life. And my relationship with my dad really improved over the last few years. Praise God. But I do think if I hadn't paid attention to my feelings and what I needed and had just not set that boundary to keep things, like, smooth and to not make anyone upset, our relationship wouldn't have improved. And we'll talk more about how tomorrow is going to be more about, like, figuring out what are the boundaries we need to set and how do you identify that. So some other examples are, you know, saying, I'm going to go to bed by 11 o'clock every night this week. That's a boundary that you're setting for yourself. You're saying, I'm going to put boundaries around my bedtime because I keep staying up till 2 a.m. binge watching Netflix or, you know, on my phone. And so I'm going to set that boundary for my health. So again, that boundary, it's putting some parameters and restrictions, but it's for your health. It's for your best interests. Or if, you know, serving at your church, you know, the church will always have more needs. And we want to serve and we want to be involved, and that's a very good thing. But maybe going back to that saying no to good things sometimes, maybe we say, you know, I'm going to serve one or two times a month because I have so much going on and it's important to me, and I also have all this other stuff and I don't want to get overwhelmed. I don't want to start dreading going to church. And I've definitely had times where I had to take on a lot as a volunteer and as a staff at a church, and I would feel myself, like, dreading going and having to do my role because I just felt like there was so much. And then when I transitioned to a volunteer who wasn't as high up, you know, I'm a worship leader as well, and I lead, like, once or twice a month, and I love it, and I get excited. But when I was leading, like, every week, I was like, okay, another Sunday, it's coming, okay. And so I was still, you know, people were still worshiping God, and it was still great, but I could tell my heart was in a different space. So that could be another example of, like, okay, I'm only going to serve once or twice a month in this ministry. Another boundary, not letting your kid run out into traffic. Most of us would agree that that's good parenting, right? Like, we'd be kind of concerned if a parent was watching their kids run out into traffic and they didn't do anything. Like, that'd be kind of scary. But that is a boundary, again, and it's for the benefit of that child. It's to keep them safe. It's not because you're trying to ruin their fun. And I'm sure if any of you are parents in here, you've seen that where you're trying to protect your child and they just think that you're the meanest person in the world. Or like, there's all those memes where parents, like, it's like reasons my toddler is mad. They use a different word for it, but you know. And it's like, my toddler is mad because I won't let him play with lighters or something, you know. But that's, you know, those are appropriate boundaries. You don't give a lighter to a two-year-old. So those are just some very simple ways to think about boundaries. So at this point, I've just talked a lot. So at this point, are there any questions or comments about what is a boundary and what is not a boundary? Or anything that feels uncomfortable about what we've talked about so far? No. I am just influencing all your brains right now, and you're all super into boundaries. That's my hope. Well, and also, you know, I can't cover everything in these 2 days. So if you want to know more, the book that is simply called Boundaries by Dr. Cloud and Dr. Townsend, it's excellent. So I highly recommend you can get a copy of that and read that more and spend more time with this material. And that's what I'm basing a lot of this on, that book. So thanks to them. But let's also talk about, you know, I talked about how a lot of times I've experienced that Christians have a hard time with boundaries because they feel ungodly or selfish. And so I kind of want to do an apologetic for boundaries and look at some scriptures. So first off, if you've read the Gospels, which most of us probably have, you have probably picked up on the fact that Jesus was not a people pleaser. He made a lot of people mad, right? He said things that people were like, this isn't cool for you to say. Even his own disciples would be like, why are you saying this? That's not cool. He also said no to people. There are several instances where Jesus left towns, people wanting him to stay because he was healing people and it was awesome. And, you know, people in the towns would say, please stay with us, and just keep doing this. But Jesus would say, you know, this is not what I'm ultimately on this earth to do. He knew that he had a greater purpose. His greater purpose was to die on the cross for us. And imagine what would the gospel be if he just stayed in one town healing everyone because he didn't want to be mean and leave, right? So Jesus said no to people. He also wouldn't stay or heal if people weren't open to him. In Matthew, it says he did not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief. So he could see, like, well, yeah, you guys aren't really open to this, so I'm going to move on to maybe some people who are more open to what I have to share. And I also love Jesus, like, totally, like, ran away and had alone time. There's lots of instances in the Gospels, but this is from Luke 5, and it says, now even more his report went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him and to be healed of their infirmities, but he would withdraw to desolate places to pray. So, again, there are all these demands on Jesus, right? People wanting him to heal them, which is not a bad thing to want. Yet Jesus still took time to get away and pray and be alone and regain his strength. He didn't just do a healing marathon nonstop. So those are all examples of boundaries. So, and there are examples of him saying no to good things. You know, healing people, that's not bad. It's not like they were asking him to do things that were bad. But he had this bigger picture, and he had his mind on his greater purpose on this earth, which was to teach about the kingdom of God and then ultimately to be our Savior, right? And healing was just a small part of that plan. So also I mentioned God defines himself as separate and distinct from others. And, you know, holy literally means to be set apart. And God says, I am holy. So he is set apart from all other things. He defines and takes responsibility for his personality and who he is by telling us what he thinks, feels, plans, allows, likes and dislikes. And like I said, you know, the Ten Commandments and the other commandments from the Hebrew scriptures and the law, those are all boundaries. That's what God's saying, you know, this is what I'm okay with, this is what I'm not okay with. And he also gives, you know, those logical consequences with Israel in Deuteronomy. There's this long passage with the blessings and curses, you know. If you do this, you will be blessed. If you do this, you'll be cursed. And just saying, you know, if you follow me, like, things are going to go well for you. But if you turn and do this, that's not going to go so well, you know. And it's the same with us. Like, I do that with my clients. I used to work with foster youth. And so I use this a lot because they always wanted to push the boundaries. And I'd be like, well, you could run away. I can't stop you, but what's going to happen is we have to call the sheriff, and then they have to go find you, and then they bring you back, but then if you, you know, it might make it so you can't stay here anymore, or you might actually have to go to juvenile hall. So I'm not threatening them, I'm just saying, if you do that, this is what will happen. And in that way, I was holding that boundary of, again, I'm not threatening them or trying to manipulate, I'm just saying, this is what's going to happen. And God does that with Israel. So I talked a little bit about how this is not selfish. And maybe some of you are like, yeah, I don't quite buy that yet. And that's fine. So just take a moment. I won't ask anyone to share. I won't. Sometimes if I'm teaching and I know people, I'll just totally put them on the spot and be like, what do you think? But I won't do that to you guys. So take a moment and think about maybe a time when someone asked you to do something that you really didn't want to do, but for some reason you felt obligated, so you said yes. So take a moment and think about a time where that's happened. And then think, how did you feel towards that person and towards that situation? So how many of you have super warm, fuzzy feelings about that person when you remember that? No. It was a little harder to love that person, right? And I keep going back to a lot of times when we are not holding good boundaries, we start to feel resentment. And that is just a killer for relationships and for love. So having boundaries actually leads to being more compassionate and caring towards others, because rather than, you know, having nothing left to give and just, okay, here's the last little bit, we're giving from a full cup. I love that image of just, and I love scriptures that just talk about God's abundance. Like, God gives from his overflowing full cup, and he wants us to do the same. And I was actually on a plane yesterday, and I was trapped at an airport for like 4 hours, so I was working on this. And then I went on the plane, and I was like, oh, this is a perfect illustration. So, you know, when you're on a plane and they're doing the safety talk and they say, you know, should the cabin pressure change, like, these oxygen masks will fall from the ceiling. And what do they always tell you to do?
If
yeah. If you're traveling with a child or someone who needs assistance, put on your own oxygen mask first before helping them. Why do they ask you to do that? Exactly. Yeah, because if you pass out, like, you can't put on someone else's oxygen mask for them if you are incapacitated. And so, no, it's not because they hate children and are just like, whatever, they're fine. Let them fend for themselves. It's because if we're not taking care of ourselves, we cannot take care of anyone else. And I see this in people who have ill family members where they are really caretaking. And they'll get to a point where they're just not doing a good job at caretaking, or they're more short with their family member. And that's when they're like, okay, I need to get away and take care of myself. And then when they're feeling alive and full and vibrant, then they can go back and they're better at caring for their family member. This is the same for parents. I am not a parent, I'll be honest with that. but I still work with a lot of parents, and I've worked with a lot of kids and teens. And I talk to the parents about how you caring for yourself and nurturing your marriage, that's actually probably one of the best things you can do for your children. Again, feels counterintuitive that you have to leave your children to, like, benefit them. But it's not selfish, because then if you and your partner, you and your spouse, are really on the same page, your relationship is flourishing, then your kids get to see that. And that's going to really positively impact your kids. So that metaphor of oxygen masks is really, really important. We can't do anything for anyone else if we are, you know, totally depleted. So sometimes we do need to say no and take care of ourselves so that we can be better servants, or so that we can care for others better. So in that way, it is not selfish. And also in that way, going back to the, you know, starting to feel resentment and the example with my dad, I was able to know that me choosing to separate myself from him physically somewhat was not selfish, because I could play it out. And I was like, if I don't do this, I'm going to just stay mad at him, and there's just going to be more injuries and more, you know, if you've ever heard death by a thousand cuts, like, there'll just be more of that. And so it actually was the most loving thing I think I could do. And it did work out. But with all that said, it's not always easy. I remember having that conversation with him, and I hung up the phone and I sobbed, because I felt like such a bad daughter. And I had to pray, and I had to ask the Holy Spirit to give me that confidence that that was the right thing to do, because that was a very new thing for me. I am a recovering people pleaser. So I used to just be like, yeah, I want to be everything to everyone. And also, just to be really honest, is I look back at my time on staff at the church in my first couple of years, I was really good at just people pleasing, and it looked like I was so godly and so loving to everyone, but I had a lot of resentment in my heart, and, you know, people didn't see it, but God saw it, and I felt it. And so now I don't do as much, but I feel my love for the church and for the people I serve is so much greater. So I'm doing less, but my heart is in a much healthier place, and I think I'm much more effective now. So again, very counterintuitive, but if you try it, I think you'll see. And sometimes it takes actually trying this to be like, oh my gosh, it works. Like, I had people come back to me and be like, so I had a conversation with my sister-in-law and it worked. I'm like, yeah, it does. So I say all this with saying it's not easy, but it is so good. Another great, this is from the book, Boundaries. Another way of describing boundaries is, what is my responsibility and what is not? We talked about that earlier. And my favorite phrase that I just keep in my head as a reminder is, poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. So maybe at work or in your family, someone's like, oh my gosh, I left this to the last second. I need your help. I need you to do this for me. Oh my God, blah, 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 blah. And you are just chilling in your office, having a great day. You've gotten all your stuff done. But then all of a sudden, this person's in crisis and they're pulling you in. And, you know, the reason why they're in this crisis is they did not plan. They did not choose to do that. And somehow they want to make you fix it for them. And, you know, when we do that, we're actually just kind of enabling them to continue the same thing. Because if they know, well, I can leave this to the last minute, and so-and-so or mom will just help me figure it out at the last minute, you know, why would they change? Why would they do it differently if the way they're doing it is working? So, and it's also not our responsibility in a lot of those times. Again, when I worked at the church, I would have people text me at 10 p.m. on Saturday night saying, hey, can we get this for tomorrow? Yeah, and I was at the height of my people-pleasing phase at that time, so I'd be like, yeah, totally. And I would, like, leave parties and, you know, and get all stressed out and have a hard time sleeping, because I'd be like, okay, I have to do this tomorrow. And whereas, like, hey, like, is that really my responsibility? I was available to that person Monday through Thursday for them to ask me for anything they needed, and So is that really my responsibility to, like, cater to their last-minute whim? Not really. And eventually I realized that because I realized I was getting really angry with that person. So I had a conversation with them. So our responsibility, things we're responsible for are our feelings, which that's a tricky one because how many times have you said, he makes me so mad? Like, he makes me so mad. Where, of course, we are affected by other people. Like, that's just a lie to say we're not. But at the end of the day, we are responsible for our feelings and what we do with them. And it doesn't mean that we don't confront people lovingly, because that is good. That is taking responsibility for our feelings. But rather than saying, you made me mad, you know, and this is a whole other topic of, like, this is what I talk about with couples, is, like, don't say, you make me, say, you did this, and then I felt this way, you know, rather than saying, like, you somehow are this wizard who affects my feelings, you know, no. So we need to take responsibility for our feelings, or when we're upset, we need to decide, okay, what am I going to do about these feelings? We're responsible for our own choices, so I chose to stay up past midnight last night. And luckily, I slept in, and so I'm good. But if I had to wake up early and I was really tired, I couldn't be like, oh, you know, I just, gosh, I'm so tired. Just really sucked that I didn't get enough sleep last night. It's like, well, that was my choice, right? So I need to take responsibility. And, you know, I chose to stay up late, and now I'm kind of tired, so I'm sorry, everyone. That's my decision. And we're responsible for our lives. And in the book, they say a common boundary problem is disowning our choices and trying to lay responsibility for them on someone else. And we need to realize that we are in control of our choices, no matter how we feel. And we have been so trained by others on what we should do that we think we're being loving when we do things out of compulsion. So we can do this to others, and others can do this to us, where we try to push off our responsibility onto others, and others try to push off their responsibility onto us. And tomorrow we'll talk more about how do you discern what is your responsibility and what is not, because sometimes it is hard to figure out. Sometimes it is like, is this my responsibility? I don't know. But that's a good question to start with. Is this mine or is it not mine? There's another scripture in Ephesians where it says you should bear one another's burdens in the church. But then a verse or two later, it says every man should carry his own load. And burdens, if you look at the Greek, it's talking about like major life difficulties. So someone in poverty, someone who just had a family member die, you know, those really big, heavy burdens. And then when it talks about his own load, the load is talking about the day-to-day life responsibilities. So a lot of times, you know, that's a verse that might get, you know, misunderstood. It's like, well, I'm supposed to bear other people's burdens. But, like, that person being on time to work every day, that's not really a burden. That's kind of a basic, you know, life responsibility. So, again, discerning between, you know, if your friend's mother just died and she's having a hard time functioning and taking care of her kids, or she has to do all this other stuff, that's different. Yeah, she needs help. So that's another way to kind of discern, like, is this something that I need to be helping them with, or is this their responsibility that it's okay for me to maybe not help with? So I want to use the rest of our time just going through what are some of the categories of boundary problems, but are there any questions or comments before I go on? You guys, I'm used to teaching teenagers, so it's kind of creepy how like quiet and attentive you all are. That's very nice. Yes?
Like peer pressure, I think you don't when they're young. It's mm-hmm. how do you help them also kind
younger
of like
ones
themselves so they know to say no and not mm-hmm. be swayed. And I
yes.
noticed that when my daughter was 10.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I can tell that she's saying yes just because she wants to please the friend or
yes.
Yeah. I try to remind her if you don't feel comfortable, if that's something mm-hmm. then I do. So is that something you just kind of just keep doing that? Just ask them to do what's in their heart?
Yeah. That's great. And that's such a good question, because that also points to, in your family, like, what do boundaries look like in your families? Is it okay for your child to say no to something, you know, within reason? It can't be like, you know, you need to go to bed, it's 9 o'clock. Like, no, I don't want to. That's my boundary. No, that's not that's not good boundaries. That's manipulation. So, but if your daughter has experienced in your family, like, you know, I'm really not comfortable being with this family member, or they like make me feel bad about myself, and you hear them and say, okay, we don't have to do that, when they really have those genuine concerns, the way you allow them to have boundaries in your family is going to translate to the rest of the world. So it's beautiful that you're already having that conversation. And the peer pressure, man, it is a force to be reckoned with. And so I think the best thing we can do for our children is helping them to feel very confident in themselves. And again, as parents, you are the biggest influencers for that. So if you can affirm their right to make decisions and that, yeah, they are responsible for their choices, that's going to translate. So it doesn't give you the perfect answer. But I guess just to encourage that, it sounds like you're already doing great. But it is hard, because when you're a teen, I worked with teenagers a lot, and I'm just like, I'm so glad I'm not a kid or a teenager anymore, because I used to care so much about what people thought. And that's just kind of part of that life stage, is your peers are so important to you in that late childhood and into adolescence. But then as we get older, I'm like, I go to the grocery store and like with my hair in a top knot and sweatpants, and if I see someone I know, I'm like, well, okay. But when I was 14, that would have like mortified me. So peer pressure with children, if we can teach them that it's okay to say no to things that are really not okay with them, that also helps them develop their own internal value system. So rather than always looking to mom and dad to tell them what's right or wrong, they're going to start developing their sense of what's right and wrong. And then they're going to, you know, one day when they go off to college or wherever, they're going to be able to figure it out for themselves rather than needing, you know, a parent or an adult to tell them. So that's a very quick answer. I don't know if that addresses that. Thank you. And that kind of goes into the first type of boundary problem is, they call it a compliant. And these are people who say yes to everything, the good and the bad. So this might be the person who is very prone to that peer pressure, or they just, you know, they have a really hard time saying no in general. Excuse me, my allergies. So does anyone, what are reasons why people don't set boundaries or say no? Not you, of course, because I'm sure you guys are all great at it, but like those other people, like why do you think people have a hard time saying no or setting boundaries? Yeah.
They don't want to make someone angry.
Yeah, they don't want to make someone angry. Anything else?
Parents.
What was that?
Parents taught them.
Right. We do get messages of like, well, no, like you have to listen to your elders, listen to your parents. Yeah, and which is not a bad thing, but again, it can get generalized in households where it's, you know, when parents say, because I said so, that doesn't really teach the kid, like, why that matters. So, yeah, so that can get generalized. Yeah.
Sometimes it's just
a totally. Moment. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to have this deep conversation right now about why you don't want to do this. You don't want to get into it, so you're like, it's just easier if I say yes. Totally. Yes.
Avoid conflict,
absolutely. Yeah, who here loves conflict? Yeah, I hate it, but God keeps bringing it into my life, and I'm like, okay, I get it. I get it. Yeah, or we don't want to hurt people's feelings. Or like you said, sometimes we may have learned it's not okay to say no. Or we might fear rejection or abandonment. That's really common in abusive relationships where the one who's abused, they feel like they can't stand up for themselves, because even though their partner is very abusive, they're very bonded to them, so they fear that they're going to leave. And that's true in, you know, non-abusive relationships too. We're afraid, oh, if I don't just go along with what this person wants, they might leave me. So we also might just used to be taking responsibility for things we're not responsible for. I see this a lot with adult children and their parents, you know, because you're responsible to your children at a much higher level when they're little than when they're adults, right? You kind of step back and let them do more and more for themselves, but I'll see parents like still trying to do everything for their adult child, and I'm like, oh gosh, okay. And sometimes the kid loves it, and sometimes the kid is like, Mom, I can do my own laundry. Like, it's fine. And I'm not saying if your kid's visiting and you do their laundry for them to be sweet that that's wrong, but that's an example. So some signs that you may be compliant is if you have that feeling of resentment towards people, if you're feeling tired a lot, if you're noticing a lot of stress and anxiety, or if you're dreading certain people or certain social situations, and then if you are prone to people-pleasing, which is doing something that you have no desire to do, and that could actually be detrimental to you, just to make sure no one gets mad, or trying to make everyone happy so you actually end up making no one happy. So I had a friend who was like that, and I was visiting her, and, you know, I had traveled from San Diego to LA to be with her, and we were hanging out, but every time her phone rang, she would answer it and have this conversation, be like, oh yeah, I can totally do that for you, da da da. And after like the fourth phone call, I just kind of shut down because I was like, you're not even spending time with me, because she was trying to make everyone happy and trying to be there for everyone. So I just kind of felt like, why am I here, you know? But in her mind, she was being a really good friend. So this is another quote from the book. It says, God wants us to be compliant from the inside out, which is compassionate, not compliant on the outside, and resentful on the inside. So if you think about that, so that's another way to think through setting boundaries, or do I say yes or do I say no, is checking in and being like, is there any chance that I might become resentful if I say yes to this? Or that this might stress me out to a degree that's really not healthy for me. So those are compliant. So they're the ones who just have a really hard time saying no, saying yes to everything. Next is avoidance. And these are the people who just kind of say no to everything. And so a lot of times when we're at one end of the spectrum and we start learning, we'll swing to the opposite. So I have had friends where they said yes to everything and then they just went to saying no to everything. And we don't want that. There's a place in the middle. And so this is where they might just put up that brick wall that's impenetrable. And what's sad about this is, you know, yeah, they don't have people's demands on them, but they also don't ask for help. And they're not receiving, because you can't receive through a brick wall. So yeah, it keeps the bad out, but it keeps the good out too. And often you might get this combination of a compliant avoidant, where they won't ask for help or ask anything for themselves, but they'll do everything for everyone else. So actually those two go hand in hand, where they'll be compliant with others, but then when it comes to them, it's like, well, no, I'm not allowed to ask for help. And that gets pretty draining. And I have some family members who do this, and I lovingly but forcefully I'm like, nope, go away, don't do that, don't wash those dishes. Yeah, if I'm doing something for them, I have to do it when they're not watching because they, won't let me. So, you're just giving away but never replenishing. Or some people are just avoidant and they don't ask for help, but they also don't give help. And that can become incredibly isolating. And that's not what God wants for us. He wants us to, you know, have community and to be able to lean on people and then to also be there for others. And then there are controllers. So these are people, I kind of call them steamrollers. And these are people who don't respect other people's boundaries. So when you say no, they don't really hear it. You know, there's a stereotype of in other cultures, where, you know, maybe the matriarch says, oh, your plate's empty, can I get you more food? No, I'm full. Okay, I'll get you more food. It's like, I just said no, I'm full. Yeah, so this is where, sometimes people who fall into this category, there's something about being needed by others that fulfills them. And helping and serving others is not bad, but when our main motivation for doing it is so that we feel good about ourselves, then it's not good. And like I shared when I was in my people-pleasing phase, this was really, that was God convicted me of this. He was saying, you are doing all this for people, but it's not actually for them, it's for you. And so we have to ask ourselves when we're trying to help someone, one, did they ask for my help? And am I actually being helpful? And am I wanting to help for this person's sake or for myself? Like, if I do this and I get no recognition, and am I going to be okay with that? Or will I be really mad that they didn't recognize me? Often people who are controllers, they'll get mad when they're not appreciated. But then they're doing things for others that they never asked for or they don't want. And I definitely have people like this in my life. And sometimes maybe you've experienced people like this and it actually makes things more complicated where you're like, no, I'm fine. Like, I have a family member who, when I visit and I stay at her house, I'll be trying to just get myself a glass of water. And if she sees me looking around the kitchen, she's like, what do you need? What can I get for you? And I'm like, I'm good. Like, I'm just getting some water. Oh, let me get it. And then she's older, and so it, like, takes her longer. And I'm like, and then she's asking, what kind do you want? This, and I'm like, I just wanted to get some tap water. Like, she makes it a lot more complicated. And she's trying to be helpful, but it actually is not helpful. So those are controllers. So it's good for us to really be aware when we're wanting to serve and help others. Again, did they ask for my help? And is this for their benefit or for my benefit? And lastly, we have non-responsives. And these are people who just, who don't hear the needs of others. So this is, again, is the opposite end of the spectrum from the compliance, who see the needs everywhere. And these are people who just aren't even aware or don't want to see that others have needs. And this is where people might use the word boundaries inappropriately, and where people might say, well, I'm not responsible for you, but it's actually, they're missing the responsible to versus the responsible for. So these are people who, you know, they'll make plans and cancel them all the time. They're like, well, you know, I'm tired and I need to take care of myself. That's my boundary. And it's like, yes, that's true, but if this is like a constant thing, you know, that might be indicative of some character issue there, and that they're not taking responsibility for their choices. They're not responsible for, you know, following through on what they've said they're going to do. So again, this can be really sad because it can be isolating. Again, you're not taking on responsibility for others, but you're missing out on those connections. So we have those four, right? The compliant, the avoidance, the controllers, and the non-responsives. And then sometimes we have a fun combination. So I might challenge you. I think I have time to play you guys a song, and you can listen and think, what category does this person fall into? But maybe also, as you're listening, thinking about if you fall into any of those categories, what might it be? Maybe thinking of what are some examples of how that plays out in my life. And if you come again tomorrow, we'll talk more specifically about, you know, how do we actually do this? But I also would, you know, hope that maybe you can have some time with the Lord and saying, God, okay, now that I see this, what do you want me to do? Because ultimately, this is all about being more of the people that God has intended us to be. I believe. So before I leave you guys with the song, are there any last questions or comments? Yes, sir.
So I have a daughter that just got married and another daughter that's going to get married. What do you think are appropriate boundaries for mothers and fathers of kids getting married? It's like we have our dreams and their dreams.
Yeah.
And their dreams are sort of immature. And I think there's something similar to tension. Kids want to honor their parents, so they might have broad boundaries, thinking, well, I guess I should give in.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I think parents want to love their children by giving them an awful lot of direction.
Yeah.
So I know you don't have a solution, but
yeah.
What do you think are some things you've learned that would be good to both honor parents, but also honor the kids that are emerging into adults?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I'm like, yep, weddings. Ah, boundaries. Bless you. It's a lot. Well, I think some of the principles we've talked about, yeah, I don't have an exact answer, but if we think about, you know, what's behind wanting to give that direction, a lot of times I've noticed with parents, there's fear that, like, something's going to go badly for their child. So they want to tell them how to do it right so that, you know, their child doesn't experience disappointment or pain, which is totally understandable. And at the same time, again, it's, you know, what's your child's responsibility? What's your responsibility? So sometimes parents can get over-involved because of that fear and wanting to protect. And, you know, if both sides are wanting to honor each other, just kind of like, am I giving this for their benefit or for mine? I've seen with a lot of families, it's helpful for parents to be like, well, we think that these are really good ideas, but, you know, take it or leave it. Having that kind of open hand policy of like, you're still going to speak your piece and speak what you think is right and good, while respecting that your kid or whoever it is may or may not take what you're putting out. Something I say is, it's okay for me to ask or to suggest, and it's okay for the other person to say no, and vice versa. It's because if people ask things of you or suggest things to you, knowing I have the right to say no. So navigating all the plans and whatnot. I mean, and then there's also boundaries of, you know, if you're contributing financially, those are some pretty nice, clear boundaries of like, well, you only have this much money from us, so you can't have the giant ice sculpture because, you know, we don't have the money for that. So there's some things that are set. So maybe starting, you know, with just the realities of what's possible and what's not. And the whole thing with adult children with parents, there's a lot of different scenarios I could think of. But for a wedding, you know, thinking through, you know, what are those hard boundaries that might be through finances or location? And then what are those things that are kind of flexible? And for parents to really get in touch with, like, what about this matters to me? And then trying to understand for the kids, like, if they want something different, what about this matters to them? Because there's always, usually when we're in conflict over these logistics, there's some value. There's like a value system underneath that we can't see. So that's one way to start, is trying to understand each other a little better. Of like, this is why this is really important to me. Why is that really important to you? What about that makes you really want it that way? So, of course, yeah, there's not an exact answer. But using some of these principles of asking ourselves, like, you know, well, what? How might this play out if it goes this way? Why does this bother me, or why do I want this? So even just starting with asking yourself those questions, and that often changes the way we interact with others. So, but thank you for asking. All right, I see that people are walking, so I might have to, I'm going to start tomorrow with this song, so if you come back, you'll hear it. But it's, I love this song. But thank you so much for your time. I will be hanging out, and if you're interested, I do have some openings tomorrow if anyone wanted a session. And if you want to come back tomorrow, we'll talk more about the logistics or the practicalities of what we actually do. But if not, God bless you, and I hope that the Lord uses this in your life. So enjoy lunch.